Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, I am joined by Jackie Smith, former Home Secretary and MP, 2020 Strictly contestant, political commentator and host of podcast For the Many. Jackie, welcome.
Hello, good morning. Lovely to talk to you.
Thanks for coming on. I'm so excited. There's so much to cover.
Oh gosh, that sounds a bit ominous. No, I'm really looking forward to it, and I love your podcast. Yeah, let's crack on.
I love it. I like that you're sort of taking a stance already. You're like, let's get moving with this. I'm a political commentator. I'm used to being fast and having opinions on things. I like it.
I've got some sound bites ready for you. No problem.
Ideal. So you are divorced.
Nearly. Very nearly.
Oh, so not legally yet.
Not quite. No, but halfway there. Yeah.
It takes a long time, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Yeah. We're doing it reasonably amicably and as far as possible, minus lawyers. So that does take a bit longer, but it's probably a slightly gentler process. Yeah.
So how do you feel being a divorced? We'll let you have the title, even though it's not legal yet. How do you feel being a divorced person?
I feel sad. It's never, I mean, is there anybody who comes on and says, oh, I really, really always aim to be a divorcee? I doubt it. But I had been married for 30 years when I separated from my husband. And it was the most difficult thing I've ever gone through. And I had always pictured myself as somebody who would, you know, grow old with him. So it's been enormously difficult, frankly, in terms of the sort of change to my life, the change to my expectations. The thing that you know, I'm sure everybody says, but you don't really realize until you're in that position, is that, of course, you're not just losing the past, you're losing the future as well when you get divorced, because everything you thought was going to happen, everything you assumed about yourself and your relationship and your what you were going to be doing and your retirement, etc., also goes at the same time as you as you get divorced. Yeah, difficult, I think, would be the best word.
It's interesting you said that you imagine you'd grow old together, because I think a lot of us have that. I had this image. I don't know if you had an image of growing old together, but I had this image of me and my ex-husband, you know, grey hair, sitting at a kitchen table, reading the paper, you know, having a cup of coffee, kind of just really content in a lovely house that is our kind of dream home. Did you have an image in your mind of growing old together?
Oh, totally I did. And it was partly informed by my mum and dad, who had a very, very long and happy marriage that only ended when my dad died, which happened just after I separated from my husband. So that was a pretty dreadful time. But it involved all of those things. Funnily enough, it also involved traveling and the, we can go off and do this and we can do the other and we can spend more time together and we can have grandchildren. And I could still have grandchildren, but you know, I could sort of picture us with our grandchildren. And so it's all of those things that have gone. And I suppose, you know, without sort of focusing too much on the sad, but this point about, I didn't get married in church, but I'd always thought that it was, you know, till death us do part. And as I say, my dad died, and one of the almost the most heartbreaking times for me in terms of the divorce was the point at which he was very ill and my mum was caring for him. And I just thought, I'm never going to have that care either for myself or to be able to offer it to my ex-husband. It almost felt like I'm not going to be able to complete this project by getting to the point where we come to the end of our lives. And I found that at the time, I found that so difficult, because I had seen it as a lifetime project, you know, and then all of a sudden it wasn't anymore.
It's really interesting that you see it as a project as well, because I think, you know, we're both career women, if you want to put it like that, in the 80s way. And, you know, we do a lot and we love our work. So I can definitely relate of like, I have a something that I'm working on right now and I need to see it to the end. And I think I can totally see how marriage kind of seems like that. And then when it's cut off, you know, whether you expected it or not, it feels unfinished, doesn't it? So how do you go about finishing the project when you're not with the other person?
Isn't that so difficult? And I think the other thing we probably share, because we work so much, is an idea that we're powerful in terms of problem solving, and that if something goes wrong, we can sort it out. And I know that, you know, that was my approach. We broke up, but it took quite a long time because we separated. And then I sort of thought, I can sort this out. If we work hard enough, we can sort this out. You know, I kept trying. We had counseling, et cetera, et cetera. And coming to the point where I had to accept that this was not a traditional work problem that if only I worked hard enough, I could solve, was a really important but really difficult time for me. And one of the things that has changed me the most, this understanding that sometimes there are things in your life that you just have to accept and live with, that you can't solve, that you can't put right. You know, a lot of my life is about, let's solve that problem, let's change that thing. But this is something, the most important thing in my life, and I actually couldn't control it. And coming to that understanding is enormously difficult, but actually is the absolutely key thing for getting over the breakup of that, in my case, 30-year relationship. You know, all of it had been more of my life than it hadn't been of my life, because I was married when I was 24. So not being able to solve it was something really difficult for me to come to terms with.
It's funny as well, because my dad died just before in between my wedding. So I had a small wedding so he could be there. And then he died before our big celebration. So I was also going through the, dad dying grief. Mm. And I think grief taught me that as well. You've got to accept it. What was it like for you having these two big life occasions at the same time.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I had some counselling, which I recommend, by the way. It was recommended to me, and I recommend it in terms of finding somebody that you can talk to who has to listen. No, that sounds dreadful because you're paying them. That sounds dreadful. But
it's true.
It's true, though, isn't it? You talk a lot to your friends, your family, and actually you should accept that when they want to talk to you. But after a while, you think, I don't only want to be talking about my pain to these people that I love and who love me. So I had some counselling and some therapy. And the thing that was most striking to me was she asked me about my dad and asked me to talk about him. And I was more upset about that than I was actually about the divorce. And she said to me, you know, you're sort of covering the grief that you feel for losing your father in the grief that you're feeling for the divorce. And to work through some of that and to realize that was really quite important, I think. And I mean, you know, it was dreadful. It was awful. It was two, you know, the two men who'd been most important in my life, who went at the same time. And that just, you know, in that, you can't really say that one made the other worse because they were both so awful that it wasn't that there's not like a competition of, oh, my God, which was the worst one. But it was more to handle all in one go.
When you said the two men in your life going, that's exactly what I felt when my dad died and I split up. I was like, all of these men I've sort of depended on.
Yeah.
You know, and I still had my mum and she's incredible, and my sister and all my friends, but it was something about these two really sort of big male figures in my life had all of a sudden gone. And then I've mentioned this before, but then my cat Albert died, and that tipped me over the edge just because Albert was a boy too. And then it sort of bring back all these feelings about losing all the men. And I was like, all the men around me are disappearing, even the cat. And yeah. And I mean, I laugh about it now, but it, like, it upset me. It really sort of triggered those emotions that I'd felt sort of, I think it was about a year before when after the cat died. And yeah, it definitely felt like this gaping hole of like all the masculine in my life had gone. So how do you go about filling that hole? That sounds a bit, could like be a bit rude, couldn't it?
That's a bit, it's a bit smutty.
You go dating. That's what
Shall
I
we get on to dating in a bit? I mean, seriously, of course, the first thing that you have to do is to recognize that you can love men, but you can also be alone and you can be strong enough on your own. I mean, my sister and my friends would probably say I still haven't got to that point, but I'm better than I was. You know, I had never not been in, from the age of 16, I had never not been in a relationship. I hadn't lived on my own from the time that I was 24. In fact, I'd never lived on my own because I'd lived at home before that. So the first thing I think you've got to do is to understand that you can do those things. And then, was I completely ready when I started dating? No. but I like men. I like them in my life. I think they're attractive, some of them. And so then you get to, the point where you think, okay, well, let's find a new one. And that's where we get to the dating.
Well, should we, before we delve into dating, should we go back a little bit into living on your own? Because I was the same. I'd lived in like house shares, or I'd lived with my parents, and then I just lived with my husband. And I never lived on my own before. And it's a bit of a shock. I love it now, but it's a bit of a shock to the system. How did you deal with that? Did you have to get a new property or did you stay in the house?
I was very lucky that I stayed in our house, and I've now bought my husband out of the house. So it's all mine. But I'm, you know, nobody could call me handy around the house, I think it would be fair to say. So some of these things are just so triggering, aren't they? Like, I can remember only about a week after my husband left, the washing machine broke down, right? I was beside myself because I sort of thought, well, when I lived with him, I would have just said to him, can you have a look at the washing machine? And then if he hadn't been able to mend it, he would have got the menders in. And all of a sudden, that responsibility fell on me. You know, I got some new pictures and I wanted to put them up and I had to find a hammer. In fact, one of the liberating things I did was to go out and buy my own slightly girly toolkit so that I'd got my own hammer. I mean, the extent to which it's been used in the last 3 years is pretty negligible. But at least I thought to myself, look, some very basic things. I've got a screwdriver and I've got a hammer. I can sort of survive. And then, of course, the other thing I realised is there are loads of people you can pay to do things. So the sense of satisfaction that I got when I rang up the local washing machines repairers and they came round and took the 50p out of the pipe and it worked again was sort of one of the first moments when I thought, oh my God, I might actually be able to manage to do this. I strongly recommend if you're in this position, you've got to sort of get your house back. Because it's lovely to stay in the same place that you've always lived in. But of course, it was yours together. So there's an element of, you know, the practical things like the bits he wants to take and the bits you want to keep. And then there's just the making it your place and tidying stuff up and getting control and putting your own pictures up and getting new furniture because some of it's gone with him. And anyway, some of it you sort of think, right, well, now is the time to get rid of that and get something new and create that space. And, you know, one of the things my sister said after a few months is she came and she said, you have now made this house your own. And it felt so important to me and I felt comfortable in it. I still don't like living on my own. I mean, I'm lucky now that one of my sons is living with me, but at least I now know that I can do it. And I sort of always thought I would never be able to.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to all of them making the house your own. I mean, I've talked about this a lot, but I basically painted everything pink. I painted the bathroom and the kitchen pink. I had a pink renaissance. I bought a toolkit, just like you were saying, I bought a toolkit and it is pink. And my uncle took the piss out of me. but I put shelves up myself and drilled into the wall. And the euphoria I felt at myself. But I do think there is that thing, isn't there, of knowing when you can't do it yourself. I think I had a big thing after we split up of I have to do everything myself now and I can't call in the experts. You know, I have to fix the washing machine myself. I have to learn how to do all these things. It actually really stressed me out. And I remember one occasion when I was trying to dismantle an IKEA unit to, because it was all tatty and dead, to take to the, oh no, maybe I was selling it. Anyway, I had to dismantle this IKEA unit and I just couldn't do it. And I cried. I sat on the spare room floor with this unit that I just couldn't pull apart. And I was like, I'm not even putting it together. I'm just pulling it apart. And I cried out of frustration because I knew that he would have been able to do it. And in that moment, it felt like he'd won or something.
Yeah.
And then I calmed down and remembered that you can ask other people to help you do things. And absolutely. Yeah, definitely. That's a revelation.
You can ask people, you can pay people.
Yeah.
People will offer, take them up on it. It's doable. And that's the, I think when you first are on your own, you sort of can't imagine that things are doable. I mean, we had at that time two dogs and sadly, you know, going back to what you said about your cat, I mean, I have to say when the male of our two dogs died at the very beginning of this year. That was another moment when I sort of thought, oh God, something really important from my life is gone. But, and the reason for talking about that was because I suddenly thought, how am I going to go to work and look after the dogs? And how is that all going to happen? And how am I going to be able to cope with everything? And you have to take it one step at a time and you have to accept help when it's offered. And then you begin to realize that actually, it is completely possible to live on your own and to cope with things with the help of friends and family who you, to be completely honest, who you probably in some cases re-engage with in a way that you didn't do when you were a couple and you were dependent on each other.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you about friends and family. And is there anything they did in particular that was really useful or good at that time? Just in case any friends or family of someone who's going through this now are listening, you know, what can they do, or what in your experience did the people who surrounded you do to make you feel particularly held or loved or supported?
Listen to you, ask you how you're doing. In the case of my sister, who'd also been through a divorce, tell you that you will feel better, and you don't believe them and they keep telling you it. And in the end, you do feel better. Take you out for fun things, because all of a sudden the person that you would have gone out for a drink or a meal with isn't there anymore. So, you know, invite you to things, go with you, be your plus one to things when you haven't got the person who you would usually have gone with. Make you laugh when you think you're never going to. In the case of my niece, send me that Dua Lipa track about new rules in order to help me to tell me to pull myself together. All those things, care, I suppose, and offer. And then in the case of you, if you're going through it, accept that help. Don't think to yourself, I've got to do this all on my own. I can't accept any help. People want to help you and to reach out to you. And so accept it.
I'm just imagining you dancing around your kitchen to Dua Lipa now. That's going to be your main takeaway.
If you're under him, you ain't getting over him.
It's funny because we've talked about songs on the podcast before as a kind of anthem for your divorce. And do you think Dua Lipa is your divorce anthem?
Oh my God, I've got so many playlists. So I've got a really sort of sad playlist, which was essentially what I listened to at the point at which I split up. And, you know, I sort of do believe this thing about, you've got so many tears in you and you might as well just get them out. Don't try not to cry. You know, sometimes just have a good cry, put on your crying music and just go with it. Then I've got to a playlist that is called, it's sort of based around Gabrielle's song Rise. And it's got all sorts of songs like that on it. Some sort of sad end of relationship ones, and then some sort of positive ones. I play that playlist. My sons say, oh my God, Mum, you're getting divorced. We get it. Do we have to have this playlist on again? And I say, shut up. This is my Rise playlist, and I'm jolly well playing it.
I love that. I have a similar playlist for the kitchen, which is like Cher, yeah, RuPaul, Britney, yep, Spears. It's, mm-hmm, just like upbeat, mm-hmm, joy songs. So I'm interested to talk to you about work during this time, because obviously you've done so many amazing things. How did you keep going with the work side of things, or did you keep going, and what got you through?
Well, not only did I keep going with the work side of things, but the work side of things kept me going, I think. Work has always been a very special part of my life. And I was, at the time, I was chairing a very big NHS trust in Birmingham. I was chairing a children's trust in Sandwell. I was doing my sort of media commentary work and some work overseas. And I can remember going into to the NHS Trust where I worked, and actually, you know, I was close, obviously, because I was the chair to the CEO, but actually talking to her about what had happened to me and her being immensely supportive, as were the senior people in the other places that I worked. And I sort of hummed and hawed about whether or not to even say anything, but I was very glad that I did, because apart from anything else, I was a bit of a mess and would sort of tear up in meetings, things like that. But it was their just being there, their understanding, their support without it being sort of desperately touchy-feely, but just the opportunity to go somewhere, do something with people that made me feel in control of something, that brought me into contact with people, that made, frankly, all of the difference. And I don't necessarily recommend this, but I probably only had about 2 or 3 days during, in fact, the whole of the last 3 years, when I just sort of woke up and thought, I can't face it. I absolutely can't face it. Now, as I say, that worked for me. What I would say to people is, this is a heartbreaking time, and you need to look after yourself. And if you need to have some time off work, you should have some time off work. But it, just for me, it was frankly easier and more soothing to go to work and be absolutely absorbed in that than it was to not. And I consider myself really fortunate to have been able to do that.
I had a similar thing. I think I was working on a new show in the West End, and I just launched myself into all of the work for that show. And I was doing it like 6 days a week, so I didn't have time to think. In hindsight, do you think you should have taken a little bit more time? Was it too much of a distraction?
I don't think that I should have taken more time off, because that just wouldn't have suited me. But you can't just push your feelings away. You can't just think, I'm just going to keep busy and it'll go away. You have to process those feelings. You sometimes have to work on them. This is part of the reason for the therapy, I think. You have to just go through it. You have to find the places where you are able to just experience and hold what you're feeling and what you're going through. So I wouldn't have been, supposing I'd said, right, that's it, I'm going to have a sabbatical or something, that wouldn't have made me more likely to do that. But I had to do other things in order to make sure that I did it, because you cannot just push it away. Something this big, this significant in your life, you've got to process it and work at it in some way or another.
And I want to talk to you about the tearing up in meetings, because I had an occasion where a song was played during rehearsals for Magic Mike, and it was my wedding song.
Oh.
And I just obviously burst into tears and ran to the toilet. And what was it like for you? Because I'm not used to crying. I'm a comedian. I'm very open about all of my feelings, but I'm not used to crying in front of people. And I was very aware of this kind of stereotype of the sad divorced woman who just cries and then is bitter and wears leopard print and goes out. And I didn't. Yeah, I mean, I love leopard print and I love going out. But at the time, I didn't want to be that cliche of like, oh, you can't get through work without crying. Did you feel the pressure of that? And how did you deal with tearing up in meetings?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that's why it was important that people around me knew what I was going through. So they didn't just think, oh, my God, what's up with her? They sort of, I mean, you know, I wasn't sobbing. I wasn't sitting there chairing a meeting sort of sobbing. And actually, I learned a really, really good tip from my PA, who said to me, you know, when you sort of feel that coming on and you think, oh, no, I'm going. If you lift your head up and look at the ceiling, if you look upwards like that, it really, really helps. It works. So probably what my colleagues saw more often than me tearing up in meetings was me suddenly looking. They probably thought to themselves, what the hell is she looking at the ceiling again for? But that was because
she just really cares about lighting fixtures at the moment. I don't know what it is.
Is she checking out the dusting or what? You know. It works. I still do it now when I sort of tear up. So, I mean, you know, I think had I been going into the office and sort of spending all day crying, I probably would have taken some time off. But I don't think it's unreasonable for people to demonstrate that they have feelings whilst they're at work.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
It's the ad break, so it's a perfect time to remind you to hit subscribe to be notified about more episodes. You can also leave us a lovely review because honestly, it makes a difference to the chart positions. And one time I was in the charts next to Michelle Obama and I was really thrilled about it. So it'd be nice to do that again. You can also join in the conversation on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Divorce Pod. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and you can also join us for our like 90s style divorce chat room experience over on Patreon. So just go to patreon.com/Samantha Baines, B-A-I-N-E-S, and it starts at £2 a month and we all have lovely and awful and amazing chats. See you there.
I always talk to people on the podcast of, did they have a particular low moment? And mine is crying face down on the slate floor in my kitchen and just looking at the little pool of tears. And I was going to say to you, did you have a low moment? And do you have a favourite place to cry? Because I'm always on the floor when I'm crying.
I had quite a few low moments. I think my favourite place to cry is probably sitting on the side of my bed, because the times that I feel most like crying are usually first thing in the morning when I get up, and you sort of realize, you wake up and you realize what's missing. Then you sit up and then that's the point where you sort of start crying. Or you've taken a nap. You know, I can highly recommend, when you are sad, taking naps. You know, another thing my sister said to me is, look, being sad is really tiring. And it absolutely is. So, you know, you'd have taken a nap, you'd have woken up, and you know, you have that awful moment when you just wake up and you've forgotten that this awful thing's happened to you. And then you remember it, and then you sort of sit yourself up, and then you have a cry. So I suppose that's my, to the extent that it's my favourite, it's my most regular place for crying. Yeah. Oh dear, the other place is, I love yoga. And the yoga class that I go to, we sit down and we have 3 minutes meditation at the beginning. That moment when you just stop from the things that are all around you is the other moment when I absolutely will tear up, you know, to the extent that she just like automatically puts a box of tissues by where she knows I'm going to be now. Because even now, you know, that will be the moment when it will come over me and I will sort of spend 3 minutes both meditating, but also with tears falling down my face. And luckily I do this class with friends and my sister-in-law. they know that that's what I'm good. They're sort of used to it. Oh, she's crying again, right? Whatever, get on with it. Downward dog. And
you don't want a downward dog when you're crying.
No, you'd be all dripping on the floor
and into your hair.
By the time we get to the end of that 3 minutes, I'm sort of ready to go, you know. But that's the other moment, I'm afraid, when I cry.
I like that 3 minute allocation. It's quite concise, isn't it? Because I can go on for hours if I'm in a wallow and I cry, and then you run out of tears, but you keep thinking and being miserable, and then you cry a bit more. Yeah. I can, yeah.
And then you get really thirsty because you've cried, you've lost so much.
And then sometimes I'm crying for so long that then I forget that I was crying because it's just been going on for ages. And then I find myself like watching TV or reading a book and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I was crying. I was meant to be sad, but it's fine now. But yeah, sometimes I need something to cut it off. Otherwise it'll just go on all day. I normally go for a walk to cut off my crying. And also when you go for a walk and cry, it feels more like a music video. So it, the performer in me enjoys that. Or trains.
I live in the Malverns. I live in Malvern with the Malvern Hills. In fact, I can look out of the window I'm sitting at now and look at them. So those are lovely walks. And you're right, that's another time, isn't it, when you sort of go for a walk and then you're in a beautiful place looking at a view and it sort of comes over you a bit. That's fine. I mean, good. That's fine, isn't it? That's what nature
need to get it
is
out.
For. Yeah.
That's what nature is for, crying. Lovely. Beautiful views of crying at.
And soothing you. What do you do? Yes. I can always remember, was it one of my counsellors, I think, who said, you need to find those tactics for self-soothing, not least because otherwise, of course, the temptation is to go back, to sort of try to go back, to try to message your ex to sort of, you know, in a slightly desperate way. And so therefore, you need to find your other ways of soothing yourself. Do you have tactics for self-soothing?
Yeah, mine, it doesn't sound soothing, but mine is distraction. Because I can get really into, I guess it's like me with work or like a project or like if I'm writing a children's book, I get really obsessed with the thing and then I just do it until it's done. And I'm the same, I guess, with emotions. So I get really into feeling sad and then just keep wallowing. So I distract myself by going for a walk or watching a really great TV show or reading a really great book, normally my three. But also we had two cats together and I still have one of those cats. And now I have a dog, a little puppy called Custard.
Aww.
And honestly, the dog has got me through. I've only had her for, 6 months now, but even now, she just, makes me get out of the house every day to take her for a walk. You know, if I start wallowing and she'll just kind of walk up, she's quite small, walk up on me and like want me to throw her ball. And it just kind of reminds you that there are other living things in the world. Yeah. And
I love you unconditionally.
Yeah, unconditionally love you. Even when I accidentally trod on her paw when she was tiny and then she was really upset about it and then I cried because I was upset about it, she still loved me. So I think pets as well get me through. But also I do need to cry sometimes, so I just let myself cry or have a day of doing nothing.
And that's fine, isn't it? And you've just got to let yourself do that. But, I think I might possibly have used this whole sadness thing as a desperate excuse for self-indulgence because I bought so many scented candles. I thought to myself, you're feeling sad. You've got to get some really expensive stuff to put in the bath. So I've done that. I agree with you about TV programs as well. I deserve to sit on the sofa and watch. In my case, I just love the more gory murder the better, actually. So I deserve to sit on the sofa and watch Silent Witness from the start for as long as I want to, and it's helped is all I can say. So find your thing.
Well, I am not good with gory murder, but I was in Silent Witness and I had to stand over. Yeah.
What were you?
I was in a couple of episodes. It was a couple of years ago and I'm in like two episodes and I'm a plainclothes detective. Can't remember what my name was. But we had a dead body when we were filming. Well, it wasn't a dead body, obviously. It was an alive woman. But she had to lie in the kind of little zip-up bag. And I had to stand over her and, like, point at, you know, a bruise that she had on her neck. And even that freaked me out because I don't like... I mean, I can deal with Silent Witness, but, like, really gory stuff I can't... horror scares me too much. So I was like... It was really freaky because, obviously, she's acting dead because that's her job. But I was like, oh, this is so weird. What if she suddenly comes to life? And obviously she will because she's alive. But like in the scene, I was very freaked out. This person was a brilliant actor and she had lots of other scenes. So she was just lying down dead for this one bit. Right. But yeah, because, and they have little merkins and stuff for pubic hair so that they don't have to show their own pubic hair, like if they're naked on the autopsy table, which I quite like. It's like a little pair of fur pants.
Does that make it better if you're wearing some furry pants as opposed to your own?
Oh, I'd rather wear a little faux muff, if we're going to call it that, than show my own. Would you?
Is this the moment when we get onto dating?
I feel like it could be. pubic hair fashions and dating. We have actually discussed that before.
Have
on the podcast.
All your hang-ups when you start dating?
Well, just because, you know, I'm still dating at the moment, sort of on and off. And, you know, pubic hair fashions change, don't they? And then, you know, I date men and women. And so some people have it all shaved off and some people have it really full and other people have a little strip. And I'm like, oh, God, what am I meant to do?
Yeah.
What was your... I don't want to ask you what you have down there unless you want to offer. No, but what did you have any worries when Samantha Baines asks ex-politician Jackie Smith what's in her pants? I'm not going to ask
you that. Former Home Secretary Jackie Smith, have you got a Brazilian or not? Answer the question.
That's the headline, isn't it? No, but did you have any particular worries of stuff like that when you started dating?
Look, I had been with my husband for 32 years. I had not had sex with anybody else for 32 years. I hadn't seen, I'm just trying to remember if this is true, you know, I hadn't seen anybody's parts apart from my husband's for 32 years. So yes, of course I had worries. And, you know, have I even been doing it right? How's it going to work? All of that stuff. I've had another relationship since I split up from my husband, although it's now over. And actually it just, you know, I can't say it was like I was when I was 16, but I think as long as you go into these things with a sense of, as long as you find the right people and you go into it with a sense of sort of care and kindness for each other, it sort of works out. You know, even if the relationship then finishes, you know, during the time that you're in the relationship, it works out. So, you know, if there are people listening to this who are thinking, I'm never going to find somebody else, I'm never going to have sex again, what am I going to do? You know, because to be honest, you're young. I'm 58, right?
Still young.
Thank you. Still able to have sex, just in case anybody's interested.
in having sex with you or just interested in whether you can have sex?
To be honest with you.
Great.
But, you know, you at that age, you sort of think, oh, God, is that it? Is that me over with now? Well, anyway, in my experience, it isn't. So that's the good news.
Yeah, that is good news. It's funny, though, isn't it? The world of dating when you're kind of in the public eye a little bit. And has anyone ever brought up things from your past? Because obviously there was the expenses scandal happened and your ex downloaded porno films. Mm-hmm. which I'm sure many people's exes has.
Claimed for them yes. on the broadband bill. Yes.
What a joy to receive that.
Indeed.
Has anyone ever like brought any stuff like that up or like made difficult jokes about your past?
Do you know, actually, people have been just really lovely. And I mean, part of the reason why I want people to know who I am before I meet them is so that if that is a big problem for them, they've basically, you know, can say, no, I'm not interested. So that we don't have to, you know, I don't have to talk about it a lot because I don't much like talking about it, as you can imagine. But actually, what people tend to say to me, and this is really lovely, is that they'll say, look, I'm not going to Google you. I will listen to what you say about yourself and I'll believe that. And, you know, the other thing that the person I was in the relationship said, which I really was very grateful to him for, was, you know, he said, look, I'll believe what you tell me, what not other people tell me, and I won't talk about you in public. And that was just lovely. And that's how most people have behaved, actually. And then, you know, obviously when I get to know people more, I will talk about what I went through because it is a very, you know, being the sort of face of that scandal and particularly the impact it had on my family is something that's a very important part of my past. So I will open up about it to people, but I don't want to talk about it on a first date precisely because it's so difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's good that it sounds like you've dated lovely people.
I have. Yeah.
That's so very lovely. I had an awful date the other day with a guy who had quite, I mean, I don't talk about my political opinions on this podcast, but had a differing political opinion to me. And so we started having a bit of a debate and then I thought, this isn't a good idea on a first date. Like, let's just get to know each other. And then he started telling me about how he loves Jordan Peterson, who has spoken out. Lots of people would say in a sexist, misogynist way. So I fed that back to my date, and he said, "Well, I don't know about that, but he still says some very sensible things." And then I thought, right, well, that's the end of this day. Like, I can't. And then we'd already, like, first date, have a political debate. And then to go into Jordan Peterson, I was like, this is too far. I can't. I don't even know how we got onto it. So I sort of imagined that you'd have that all the time, but it sounds like you have a lovely time.
Well, I don't, you know, I want people to understand that I come from a political background, but I've never said I can't, you know, I've never said I'll never kiss a Tory. I've never said, you know, you'd have to be exactly in line with my political views in order for me to date you. I mean, if I'm frank, I would find it difficult, I think, to have a relationship with somebody that didn't broadly share my values. And I wouldn't date somebody who I felt was going to be misogynist or racist or who I just, you know, couldn't imagine spending any time with. But I'm not going to, you know, you don't have to sort of tick a I've always voted Labour box in order for me to go out with you by any means at all.
Well, that's good to know. I'm sure a lot of people are like,
I mean,
okay,
bloody hell, I don't want to narrow the field too much, do I?
So, any advice for anyone looking to date at the moment? Maybe they're a similar age to you because you said you felt like that was the end for you. And then it wasn't, which is lovely. So any words of wisdom?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, given that I'm now single again, I'm not sure I'm the best person. But anyway, I have had some lovely dates and I've had a lovely, you know, relationship post my marriage. My first piece of advice is do it. It's not as scary as you think it's going to be. Don't sort of think, oh, well, I can't use a dating app because I'm too old, because trust me, there are loads of people our age on the dating apps and in fact, a lot older. Go into it with a sort of one of the problems with having been married for so long is that you have to get yourself out of the mindset of thinking, if I meet somebody, it's because I'm going to be marrying them and spending the next 30 years with them. No, it isn't. It's because you're having a cup of coffee and a chat with them. And, you know, my sister is constant. My friends, even my sons, when I go on a date, they go, oh, bloody hell, Mum, you don't have to marry them. Just, you know, it should be fun. It should be about meeting somebody new. And if it goes somewhere, that's lovely. And if all that happens is you have a lovely meal or a coffee or a drink or a walk with somebody, that's lovely. And if they're an absolute twat, well, you don't have to see them again. So it's sort of win-win, really. But then again, perhaps I'm going to meet somebody dreadful the next time I go on a date.
Well, no, I hope not. That's good advice for me as well, actually.
Good.
Because I keep going on dates and thinking, you know, on the first date, I'm like, well, is this going to be long term? Like, what's you know, what's going to happen in the future, instead of just having a nice time, which is very important. Now, I did want to speak to you about Strictly as well, because obviously you were on 2020 Strictly in the UK, and you did an amazing job. What was doing Strictly like when you're like newly divorced and separated and wearing sequins on the telly?
Look, that's part of the reason why I did it, to be honest with you, because, you know, I think for any of us who go through a divorce, it feels, you know, it feels and it is the end of something. And as I've already said, you know, at my age, you sort of think, oh, right, well, is that it? And I felt I can either just continue to sort of wrap myself up in misery, or I can try some new adventures. And I had been on holiday on my own for the first time ever. And then they contacted me from Strictly, and I thought, yeah, do you know what? Let's go for it. I have never regretted doing that. I absolutely loved it. It was a fantastic adventure. It's very kind of you to say what you said about me, but I did, of course, go out at the first opportunity. My argument is that's because there were fewer of us on it, because it was a real COVID Strictly last year. So I would have lasted a few more weeks if there'd been more people. But I loved it. And it's probably not something that I would have done had I still been married. So I see it as a fantastic adventure. And, you know, everybody can't go on Strictly, but I think everybody can think about what's the thing now that would be a big adventure for you, or something that perhaps you're slightly scared of that you could do. And I would strongly recommend doing it when you decide what that is.
So with all that's happened and all the challenges like Strictly and all the work achievements that you've made since you separated, and you've had a new relationship, you've been dating, how do you feel now about divorce and separation and your recovery?
Most of the time, I feel optimistic. I feel proud that I've got this far. I feel excited about the new opportunities that are available to me, you know, not just in terms of relationships, but just being responsible for yourself gives you a certain amount of freedom, liberation. I'm not starry-eyed about this. I still now will have times when something will remind me of my marriage or my ex-husband, and I will be crying again. And I think I'll always, you know, I think I will always be like that, because it was a very happy marriage and it was an enormous part of my life. But I'm more accepting of the fact that that's the case now. So, you know, as my sister used to say to me, and I didn't believe her, I will say to people who are sort of in the thick of it, it will get better. I promise you, it will get better.
Oh, thank you. It's been so brilliant to chat. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
It's been lovely to talk to you.
Where can people find you on social media and things and your podcast?
They can find me on Twitter at Jackie_Smith1. They can find me on Instagram at StrictlyJackie. They can listen to our podcast, For the Many, on all good podcast platforms. And it's if you have trouble, it's a global podcast, so you can get it on Global Player.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Ready, please leave a review. Love you forever.